Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and I'm about 30 pounds and a back tattoo away from getting a show on Viceland. And with me, I have...
Meek Mill is free and Kanye's lost his goddamn mind. What a world.
And...
Okay, I just woke up at... Hold up, what the fuck? It's Wednesday?!
Yeah.
Busy since Monday.
Yeah.
At your house.
Okay, first off, were you trying to raid the Baja Blast in the fridge? Dude, you know where you can get some. Get your own. Stay away from my blast.
Like I did today.
I've seen it yet.
By the way, hands off.
I work hard for my blast. And second, this is coming in a little later than usual. I spent all of my Monday preparing for some finals. Yeah, it's one of those weeks. So, you can probably already tell how my week is going, minus the actual proper formalities, but, you know, I suppose we should probably get into those now. So, how have you all been doing this past week?
Well, can't complain. Although I can complain a little bit, because I had to miss out on a record store day because of work! And also no money, but work!
Ah, work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme this week.
Yeah, of both kinds. The actual work. And me putting together a nearly 3-hour-long audio show, which took me 3 sessions totaling 8 hours of work.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Wasn't there, like, some fucking fat, stupid loser on that podcast who had, like, bad opinions about Tokyo Ghoul or something?
Yeah, I think you know him.
Anyway, we'll elaborate on the rest of the Record Store Day stuff later, so be patient. Stick a pin in that for now.
Yeah.
Mark, what about you?
Let's see, I got nothing.
Oh, no. Anyway, I guess as for me, one good thing did happen. I won an award! Yeah, I got an award for, like, what I do at the radio station. My show won, like, best of, like, the loud, you know, shows. Any show mainly dedicated to some kind of, you know, rock music of miscellaneous kind, so to speak. But, yeah, you know, that makes me feel validated, man. Validation! Other than that, just, you know, again, the Record Store State up. Record Store Day stuff that we'll get to later, and of course, binging through Agretsuko on Netflix twice.
Ah, yes. A very fine show indeed.
It's unreal how good it is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This is definitely a contender for anime of the year.
Yeah. Nothing like hearing a cute office girl going... Yeah, that's like you're in a cute little office girl singing, "You're a shitty boss!" That's what happens when I don't prepare. I end up cacking up a lung. Ow.
Yeah, you should probably get some Halls or something. Or maybe get a drink or something, I don't know.
I got some
maybe
water
you
with
can
me.
Run, go to the bar and you run into like someone that looks like one of those Sanrio characters. Which leads me to ask several questions about what does and does not exist in the universe of Agretsuko. I need my Hello Kitty crossover in season 2, goddammit.
Yes.
But yeah, that's about it for the formalities that will be shared here. So let's of course move on to the new song discussion for the past week. There is quite a bit here, so again, as always, we will leave a link down in the description to a playlist of all these songs so you can listen along, judge for yourself, and then judge us for our miscellaneous takes on them. First off, let's start off at the top with Lucy here, just, you know, a one-off track just put out by this band. Touche Amore, probably still riding pretty high off of 2016's Stage 4, dropping a standalone track this past week called Green. The video has, like, a lot of green filters on it, but I'm not sure if the lyrics have anything to do with greenness fully. But, you know, it doesn't sound too far off from what they were doing on Stage 4. You know, the drum beat and the bass groove is very driving, fast, and punky. The guitars play these very grungy but kind of simplistic note and chord progressions. There's a small bit of a halftime break in, you know, the chorus, and the vocals are that usual very gruff but, like, still clear so you can make out the emotions and stuff, man. I mean, I'm not much of a Touche Amore guy, but, you know, for the fans of this, they're obviously going to eat this up, no problem.
Yeah, there's some solid stuff in here. I picked up a bit of a shoegaze vibe with that opening bass line, though. It's just sort of that line that makes you dip your head and just nod along to it. The vocals are excellent, too, despite being very raw and scratchy, but that's how you know it's real, man.
Human emotions. Wait a minute, this isn't a video game podcast. Why am I making fun of David Cage? But anyway, let's move on from that to our boy Eason, releasing another single from his May 4th released Amur. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. I'm not going to bother pronouncing it again, but yes, we have the following single following off on the previous track, Arcane and Perry, this one simply called Wake. Much more pronounceable, in my opinion. And also much more aggressive, it seems like. This one is a much more, like, rapid, aggressive, with, like, lots of triplet 16th note riffs and, you know, blast beats and shit. More gruff, screeching vocals. These vague melodic cleans over the chorus. And the melodies seem very deliberately disorienting, like, if they're shifting key signatures at points. Like, it's not clearly, like, outline what the melody is supposed to be. And, you know, there is a lot of beating on the toms to, you know, maintain that really low-end, fast groove. Hell, at times it almost kind of sounds like a prettier version of the Black Dahlia Murder. And definitely, again, more aggressive than Arcane and Perry, which was more of a sort of mid-tempo groove sort of thing. So I think I'm, you know, starting to warm up to this style. And I'm, of course, looking forward to the final product because it's fucking Eason, people.
Yeah, I'm digging this kind of experimental, weird stuff. I am getting a bit of a King Diamond vibe from this song, though. It's very doomy in presence, while being super frantic and fast with the guitar and drum patterns. Can you even go past double time in drums?
Well, I mean, someone has to invent quadruple time eventually. I assume if you're George Colias from Nile.
George Colias has no groove.
I still don't know how he plays so fast, though. I need to learn these things. I can't do the thing with my ankles.
That was a Jared Dines reference bit I did there.
Well, who cares about Jared Dines references? He's not even the best Jared.
Well, he does have his own 18-string guitar, granted.
Nerd. But anyway, let's move on from the metal and hardcore for a second to... Oh, hey, look, it's Tyler, the Creator again!
And he has another track that been cut off from Skinned by Flyboy. And this time it's a very rough demo track called Rose Tinted Cheeks. Okay. And of course, this track, like, it is like, you know, another one of those, you know, very smooth, very R&B feel type of tracks that probably would have had a good feel in the album if, you know, it would have been finished. But it's not. But hey, yeah, the shit sounds all good, especially with the instrumental from Tyler. And I gotta say, it's a pretty right track. I mean, I wish it was finished. I mean, it would have been a good fit for Flyboy, but alas, it's not there. But hey, still all good.
Yeah, this definitely seems like it's a textbook demo because, like, it seems like it's half a song that kind of goes on for like 5 minutes. It just kind of loops like this minimal beat with lots of twinkling R&B synths and some very sensual guitar work, and most of the vocals are just, like, you know, actual singers and, like, some pitch shifted stuff in there. There's only really, like, I think, what, 30-40 seconds of actual Tyler raps in there.
I think mostly in the first half he does rap, but then I think later half is just more the instrumental and I guess whoever was on there as well.
Pretty much, yeah. So, who knows what would have happened if this actually got fleshed out to a full song. The world may never know. But anyway, let's move on from that to Miss Ariana Large. Oh, wait, I have that marked down in my notes wrong. Ariana Grande.
There you go.
Ah, that's what the name is. So, yeah, she actually came out with a new song recently. She's apparently still prepping some kind of a new album. We're unclear on like release details yet, but this is apparently the first new music she's I don't know how long ago it was. I didn't know if she had something out. I forget if she had something out, like, in the wake of that terrorist attack that she was unfortunately involved in.
The last time was in 2016, or was it 2015? I think last time was in 2015, I think. Then followed by that bombing.
Yeah. Looking it up now, 2016. Yeah, it came out on May 2016.
Yep. So, obviously, it's interesting to see what she follows up with, because it seemed like the whole tragedy affected her really deeply on some level. As for this song, No Tears Left to Cry, there's a bit of maybe a contradiction here. I mean, the title makes it sound like it's going to be very somber, and, you know, the intro may lead you to think that way, but the second the song kicks up, it's a fast, shuffling, up-tempo kind of R&B beat.
Very, very poppy type of beat.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a stripped down Don Richards banger. And you know, even though, like, I could admit maybe it's okay on some level, it's just like I can't say I have any kind of strong connection to Ariana's music. So even though it's one of the better songs she's put out, I just kind of feel nothing and can't really make any more significant comments other than this music video makes it feel like I'm watching a weird Doctor Strange fan film.
Yeah, pretty much, especially with the whole thing with she can take her face off or some shit. Oof. And the weird visuals with her, like, you know, walking upside down and
all the skyscrapers folding into each other like paper.
Yeah, I was not expecting that tempo switch up after the intro, like, at all. But, you know, I'm always one foot into the pop scene, checking in here and there, and it's solid enough, if only a bit too repetitive with its repeating sections. But we shall all give praise and all hail to the music producer, God among men, Max Martin, the guy who has produced every hit song over the last 20 years, because he's working on this album.
Every hit song, you say?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I don't feel like doing a bullet point breakdown of that.
It would
statement.
Take way too long anyway.
Yes, it would. That's for another podcast. But anyway, let's move on from that to Paisley Park. Seems like some activity is going on in the realm of the deceased prince. Care to fill us in, sir?
Yes. So, in the time in between our last shows, the Paisley Park Estate, as I'm calling them, released something a bit interesting. A rehearsal recording of the song Nothing Compares to You, made famous by Sinead O'Connor, but written by Prince, which was recorded at Prince's rehearsal space in Minnesota in 1984. And this is apparently going to be the first official, I guess you could say in some capacity, released recording of the Paisley Park Estate and Prince, because holy crap, holy, they have a lot of music found within his estate. And I mean a lot. A fucking vault worth of stuff.
God damn.
Yeah, apparently I heard they're planning some kind of a set of, like, big releases of all this unreleased material.
Yes. Variety have put out a report saying that they will put out an album of previously unreleased tracks on September 28th, and there's apparently going to be more sprinkled throughout the fall and later on. Now, I'm not going to get into, you know, questioning whether or not this is the right thing to do, considering we have all this unearthed music, but look, that argument went out the window when Tupac died, and we still get Tupac albums every couple of years, so, hey, do whatever.
And you could argue it technically died before that with Hendrix.
Yes, also true. But going back to this initial recording of course, Nothing Compares to You, what can be said that hasn't been said already? It's a great performance, full of life in that trademark style from Prince and the Revolution circa 1984. And above all else, it served as a great reminder of how much great, incredible music this band was able to create, both during that time and later on. And the accompanying video that came up with this was just made up of rehearsal footage B-roll with some VHS filters put in. I'm pretty sure most of those were artificial. And let me just say, Prince can rock it in heels, man.
Yeah, it's a wonder he'd want to, though, because heels are fucking painful. I have to imagine, regardless of what sex or gender is wearing them, why do we keep them around? It's like, you motherfuckers, like, you know, make heels, but you can't fucking put, like, pants, like, pockets on dresses? Fucking fashionable, I swear. But, obviously, the big thing to discuss would be, like, the version differences. Obviously, you know, the 1990 Sinead O'Connor song is a seminal classic of 90s pop. And the Prince version, you can tell there's more or less, like, it follows the same melodic structure, lyrics, you know, overall beat. And hell, they're pretty much the same length. I think, like, the Prince version is only shorter by a few minutes. But obviously, 6 years can make a huge amount of difference. You know, Sinead's feels a little bit more stripped down, you know, fitting with the pop standards of the time, whereas, you know, the Prince version has a bit more musical detail, what, with, like, those sexy saxes, you know, the more active drum work, and those, you know, classic 80s, you know, glam rock guitars with that signature Prince touch. Obviously more attuned to his own particular creative tics. Interesting to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Now we just got to see what we actually get out of these releases.
Like I said, they found a lot of stuff. An entire vault that they had to pry open with something. There's a lot in there. So expect some good stuff to come out in the coming months.
In other words, there might be some releases from years to come, or just at least for the next, I don't know, 5 to 6 years.
However much they can put out, for as long as they can put out, I'm sure they'll put it out one way or another.
Yep, sounds about right. Anyway, moving on from that to our next topic here. Looks like we were revisiting the man known as Mr. Josh Tillman, or I guess more accurately, Father John Misty. Yes, it appears that after racking up literally all of the Album of the Year accolades with Pure Comedy, his 2017 75-minute ode to the many frustrations and failures and fuck-ups of the human experiment, it appears he's already got another full-length album in the pipeline, one that supposedly was apparently accidentally leaked by an Australian iTunes listing. Or was it America? I actually don't know, but some country accidentally leaked the album briefly, and I assume whatever his fans were doing there were able to listen to it. But yes, his next full-length album is coming out June 1st, and it's titled, what else but God's Favorite Customer. Yep, that sounds like Misty, all right. Now, this album will, of course, include the song that we previously discussed. God, I'm already blanking on the name already. I think it was called Mr. Tillman. A song which I'll admit was actually pretty amusing, and I say this as someone for who, look, Pure, my musical priorities in 2017 just didn't leave room for an album like Pure Comedy. Let's just leave it at that. So now we have two songs here, one called Just Dumb Enough to Try, and the second called Disappointing Diamonds Are the Rarest of Them All. Now, of course, if you know John Misty's music, the, you know, general shtick is sort of the same here. There are these, you know, relatively mild, very tuneful, folksy kind of singer-songwriter ballads. Disappointing Diamonds has maybe like a bit of a big band vibe with a little bit more of a tempo. But as far as like, you know, the lyrical content, which is what most people are usually here for, there's kind of a weird like disconnect between these two songs, and it makes me wonder the idea of the album overall, because Just Dumb Enough to Try, yeah, it's, you know, melodramatic as hell, but the lyrical subject matter is, you know, it's about him trying to maintain whatever relationship he's in, despite the fact that he's aware it's probably, like, bad for him, and he's, like, a fuck-up who's gonna, like, ruin it. But the actual lyrical content is weirdly sincere and candid, minus the usual snarky Misty-isms, whereas Disappointing Diamonds is, again, It veers more into the traditional Misty mold, with lyrics like a pervert on a crowded bus, the glare of love bears down on us, like a carcass left out in the heat, this love is bursting out of me, like an oil tanker tipped at sea, this love's contaminated me, like a constant twitching in my eye, this love of ours will never die. So I'm getting the vague sense from these two songs and the previous one that maybe this one is more of a self-critical record than, you know, the fucking just Holden Caulfield-ishness of pure comedy, which, you know, maybe I can get into it. Maybe. I'm leaving room to maybe say something positive about the album when it comes out on June. Let's just leave it at that.
I felt nothing for this. Meh.
This sounds like what I would hear on Scrubs.
Yes. Yes, it certainly does. In fact, it sounds like if the janitor started a music career. But now, let's move on to something that is actually significantly more hype. Yes, after many, many years, after at least a decade or so of waiting, it appears that Mr. Darren Malakian, guitarist of System of a Down, has announced a new song and a new album from Scars on Broadway.
Well, technically, it's Darren Malakian and Scars on Broadway this time around.
Well, I mean, what's the difference? Right, there is a difference. Apparently, for this album, he couldn't even bring in John Dolmayan on drums, so it's like, what's even the point?
Yep, he's going about this whole album completely solo, with a live lineup to be announced at some other date. Okay.
You know, because it's not like the other System of a Down guys are getting their shit together. But
what,
yes,
is it happening, guys?
But yes, the sophomore effort from Scars on Broadway is coming out July 20th. It's called Dictator, and we have the lead-off single Lives. Now, I may have snarked about Scars on Broadway in a few episodes past, but let me just lay out just my train of thought listening to the song. Okay, so Darren is a good songwriter. He is a good vocalist. He, you know, helps write many of the classic System of a Down tracks that we all know and love, and he's like a good 50% of why that band worked. Are those aspects of his, like, ability to write? You know, he knows how to write, like, catchy riffs and, you know, melodies and choruses, and that's perfectly on display here, but I still need, like, the System weirdness. It's like, when you look at, like, the respective careers, like Surge and, you know, Darren, it's very clear what each of them brought to the System picture. You know, Darren had the songwriting that helped, the songwriting and the catchy choruses that helped ground everything, whereas Surge was the one that, like, brought in all the crazy weird ideas that benefited from a bit of grounding. And it's like, they really need each other if they ever want to bring out the best of each other. Because honestly, this song is like if you took the title track of Hypnotize and sucked out all like the idiosyncratic weird bits, and we're just kind of left with a standard alternative metal tune. And it's just like, yeah, that's cool, I guess. Are we getting more System soon, please?
Yeah, I mean, the song's okay. You can kind of tell it's Darren doing about it all on his own, because the drums are, not to sound like a dick, but pretty flippin' basic. So basic, in fact, that Jared Hines could do it.
Roasted.
I kid. But it's okay. There's a strong Middle Eastern vibe to it that I can get behind, and it does work in its favor. And it's worth noting that this song was released on April 23rd, which was the 103rd anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, which Darren and the other guys in System of a Down have been very, very open about with their political feelings about that whole thing and all the turmoil going about it. But we're not smart enough to talk about that on this show. No. We're not stepping onto that fucking time bomb.
No, we're not. So, yeah, I'm just like, please, new System. Why does everybody have to keep fucking around? But anyway, let's move on from that to more Adult Swim singles time, of course. And we, of course, have two this week since we're recording on a Wednesday night. The first coming from a band that we might have actually been primed for earlier when they had a music video airing on Toonami. That is, of course, The Voids, the current project of Strokes founder Julian Casablancas. This one being a one-off track called Cool as a Ghoul, with cool spelled exactly like ghoul because, you know... Poor literacy is trendy for alternative rock bands. And yeah, this one, again, it's been a while since... I haven't actually listened to the Voids proper, and it's been a while since I've listened to The Strokes, but this is certainly something different. Yeah, it's, you know, a very fast driving tempo with heavily synthetic drums. There's this weird layering of, like, moaning, droning, saturated vocals with lots of, like, industrial overlay. The guitars have a very, like, a vibe that's somewhere between Dead Kennedys and Butthole Surfers. Like, the actual, like, riff, like, rhythm and melody almost kind of reminds me of, like, Holiday in Cambodia. And there's even this, like, super weird, like, sparse break in the middle with, like, some weird sampling shit about, like, Warmonger of the Year. And, I actually can kind of dig this. It certainly sounds a hell of a lot more interesting than anything the Strokes put out in their last couple albums, I can say that much.
Mm-hmm. It's all right, but is it just me, or is this song loud as balls, yo?
Yes. Yes, it is. Did Rick Rubin produce this?
Okay. Complaints about the Adult Swim single website. There's no volume control. There isn't even a scrub feature to go through the track. So I'm hearing this song at full blast, and it just... I had to take my headphones off after like 5 seconds. It's so fucking loud. Boom, boom, boom.
This is why I listened on YouTube.
Yeah, well, goody for you. You should have put that link in the fucking info sheet.
You could have searched it yourself. What, do I have to spoon feed you every link? God.
Yes, because I'm very fucking lazy.
Well, that sounds like a you problem. And speaking of lazy, let's beat our meat and go to sleep. Because we have our next single here, which is a new jam from Thundercat! Yeah! Yay! And it's another one relating to video games, because it's called Final Fight.
Yep.
Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, yeah, okay, so I was like to check, I guess, for around, like, so yeah, like I said, there's about using the video game, like, video game sound and music, and this is, like, let's do it now, like, this is, you know, what Thundercat normally does best, at least, this one feels like, I'm feeling some either Street Fighter type of sound going on right here, but listen to the sound. It kind of feels like something I would have heard from Drunk, something we'll hear from Drunk, or at least something that would have been a demo. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's got that same kind of like wonky synthetic bass tone in there. With all, like, the, you know, with occasionally getting, like, those more natural, just, like, raw, like, complex bass chords and melodies. Nice shuffly beats, and there's a point where someone jumps out a window halfway through the song. And the song draws a lot of attention to it if you want to talk about stuff that's loud as fuck. Just, psh! Thundercat, always a good time. Now, let's move on from that to a couple of one-off songs here from the same artist, a veteran of the Adult Swim Singles program, Mr. Blank Mass, or I guess technically Mr. Benjamin John Power, formerly of Fuck Buns, who now does the project Blank Mass. Yes, coming off of 2017's World Eater, the man has dropped two solo tracks, Odd Scene and Shit's Luck, and, well, it's certainly something different. Now, I'll admit, I'm not entirely familiar with his work, with his previous project, Fuck Buttons, although I'm told that's mainly sort of like a electronic, drony, post-rock sort of thing. But screw all that post-rock shit, because this is very clearly industrial. Seriously, this is like some aggressive, harshly grinding, 9-inch nails, 3 teeth, cell dweller, combi Christ, what have you, that sort of fucking Devil May Cry ilk. Like, Shit Luck, you know, is kind of the shorter of the two, so it has, you know, it's the most aggressive, like, digital hardcore banger, just kind of, like, condensed into, like, less than 3 minutes. Meanwhile, Odd Scene is, like, a lengthier song, but again, it's very blisteringly heavy, the saturated, aggressive, static vocals, it's all speed and D-beats, and then, you know, you get, like, this little sort of a halftime break in the middle that, you know, kind of drones a little bit more. It's, again, I can kind of vibe with this, but oh boy, if you're not, like, used to this kind of thing, then, and you're, like, you know, sort of a Blank Mass fan, then, man, this has got to be a left turn.
I had no idea what to expect going into listening to these two songs. Coming out, I'm ready to get in the mosh pit and break some teeth. And maybe not just my own, either.
Damn.
Yeah, it bangs hard.
Yeah, I mean, this is a definite left turn for Blank Mass, considering, like, I haven't listened to World Eater last year. It's like, okay. Okay, I see what Blank Mass, like, I like it. It's not my favorite, but it's pretty solid.
Yes, it's for certain acquired tastes, and my taste is definitely this level of acquired. But now let's move on to our last two songs, which are a couple of mammothly big metal tunes. First up, The Lads in Y.O.B., or Yob, or however it's actually pronounced. I'm actually not entirely sure. You know, signed to Relapse Records recently, which reissued a bunch of their old albums, and they've announced their first new album since their 2014 effort, Clearing the Path to Ascend. Their latest album is called Our Raw Heart, and it's coming out June 8th. And thus, we have the first single here, the nearly 10-minute-long fucking sludgy mass, The Screen. And, you know, as someone who binged the Yob discography recently, this is, in some ways, it's similar to previous songs. Again, it sludges along at a very slow, deliberate, steady tempo. The production is rough and gritty. The freaking, you know, some of the chord structures have this kind of doomy tonal and yet atonal sort of quality to them. But, there is kind of a noticeable difference here as well. See, usually the Yob sound can be more full-bodied on a lot of their songs, but when you're listening to the actual progression here, the song is this very trudgy sort of 6-8 tempo sort of thing, but the guitar rhythm is just kind of like this deliberately slow kind of chug, like 3 notes at a time sort of thing, and the guitar tone on this thing is super brittle and just, you know, it sounds very creaky, like, okay, apparently in the time between the last Yob album and this one, frontman Mike Scheidt had gone through a bit of a health scare, apparently dealing with some kind of nearly fatal intestinal disease, and, you know, when you listen to this with its, like, creaky sounding guitar riffs and its very sparse, like, drum rhythms, it sounds like, this definitely sounds like it was written by someone who had just been staring death in the face not too long ago. It's like a diseased sounding version of like Pallbearer, and it's kind of a unique experience by the Yob standard. And I can actually like really get into it. That sort of vibe of just like death is staring you right in the face. This could be another good one for Yob. I am intrigued.
Yeah, that disease we're talking about, diverticulitis and MRSA.
Oh, that too.
Like, no joke, that sucks. That fucking sucks. And yeah, I can hear that in this song. It's doomy as shit with loads of halftime grooves to it all, and it sounds like the verge of death. All 10 minutes of it. Though I imagine when heard under the influence of drugs, both medical and not, this song would lead to a major trip.
And not like the fun kind of trip either. No. No.
I would imagine it would be the result of combining LSD and PCP.
Oh boy. I wish I had a clever letter abbreviation to react to that, but sadly I don't. Yeah, this is just... It really is raw. You know, the album title seems like it's going to deliver on what it's promising. But we got about a month and a half until this comes out, so we shall see what else they drop. And now for the last one here, and... Oh boy, we get to talk about these guys. great. Alright, so let's dive into this head first. So it appears that July 13th, so about a month after the Yob album, we will see the release of Ordinary Corrupt Human Love, the fourth full-length studio album from shoegazing black metalers Death Heaven. Which means we get to have all those arguments all over again about what is and isn't real black metal. Meanwhile, I'm just out here on the sidelines thinking, all y'all motherfuckers suck, so I don't see why it matters. It's like Inquisition, Take, Death Heaven, what's the difference? Y'all suck. So, yeah, of course they, along with the album announcement, released their lead-off single, a 12-minute track called Honeycomb. For some reason, I'm not really sure I get the naming here. And yeah, you know, there's definitely a lot of shoegaziness in here, with a lot of the blast beats and, you know, the guitar tremolos that are really muddy and grinding against the senses with, like, these zigzagging note progressions. And then, like, once you get, like, a third of the way through, then it does that thing where it, like, tries to become more of a sort of indie garage rock sort of vibe with a very summery aesthetic, especially when you get to the solo sections. And like, if you in the parts where like it removed where the vocals just aren't, you know, screeching in your fucking ear, you know, this really does sound like it could be like any old like garage rock band. Like you wouldn't be able to tell this was technically supposed to be metal adjacent. And then definitely past like the halfway mark, it's like there's definitely more an alternative rock with, like, a slowed-down tempo that kind of gets a little bit more emo in a sense of, like, pianos become the teeth, or, like, modern baseball, American football, your choice of emo band here. And I guess it's appropriate given that the video clip they released for this is mostly, like, you know, it has, like, this weird little film sort of filter border thing with, like, a sepia tone filter, and then, like, you're just seeing like, you know, what looks like a bunch of vacation footage, you know, just them screwing around at landmarks, footage of cute little dogs that are very good dogs, and I want to give them all belly rubs. Just that kind of, like, summer vacation aesthetic, so to speak. Because, man, I just don't know, man. Like, this band never really does much for me, and, like, sure, like, the more shoegazy alternative rock parts are okay. And, you know, if you snipped those, like, out and isolated them into a little bubble, like, it'd probably click with this. But then when you have to have them, like, sewn ass to mouth with this annoying black metal shit, it's like, you know, this is why I would prefer, like, honestly, I'm just going to stick with listening to, like, Sandhat or even Alcest, who do this way better, if we're being honest.
Well, this is certainly loads of weird melding of styles, and I really don't know what to think of it. I think I need to sleep on this one for a while before coming back with a better idea of what to think about it. Also, that filter effect we're talking about, that's meant to be a Super 8 video camera.
Yeah, I couldn't think of what precisely it was.
Yeah, just remember, the movie Super 8...
I actually don't remember that movie.
It's okay. Nobody does either.
Oh, boy.
Was it Lens Flare?
Yes. Yes. Thank you, J.J. Abrams.
Well, now that could be like... Well, that could be anything. That's, you know, Lens Flares everywhere. But yeah, that basically about sums it up for the new song discussions. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have news topics to discuss. So stay tuned, kids. And we are back. Unfortunately, our first bit of news here is quite a bit of a downer. So this past week, specifically on Friday, April 20th, unfortunately, it was discovered that Tim Bergling, the Swedish DJ better known by the alias Avicii, had been found dead in Muscat, Oman. Sadly, at the moment of recording this, I still haven't seen a proper cause of death identified, so we're not really sure what happened. But still, it's obviously a very sad, tragic thing all around, so... You know, we obviously send our best condolences to Avicii's family, friends, and other loved ones, and, you know, maybe the story becomes a little bit clearer in the next couple of weeks. Very sad times.
I'm age 28, too.
Yeah.
That is just bad. But anyway, let's move on from that to our next story here. So, did you hear they're making a movie about Al Capone?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it's not...
I think maybe one sometime.
Yeah, because it's not like there aren't enough of those already. You know, there was the original Scarface, there was 80s Cuban Scarface, then there's Leonardo DiCaprio remake Scarface.
Clearly, what we need here is a movie about the findings of Al Capone's glove compartment. Aha! Roadmaps!
You know, you say that, but I would probably watch that unironically. I mean, why the fuck not?
I think we all would.
If you make these freaking, you know, movies and shit. And it looks like we got another one here. This one being a biopic called Funzo, starring Tom Hardy as a 47-year-old Al Capone at a time in his life when his mind is being taken over by dementia. The film also features appearances from actors Matt Dillon, Linda Cardellini, and Dougie Jones / Dale Cooper himself, Kyle MacLachlan. Twin Peaks reference. And perhaps most interesting, it was announced this past week that rapper LP, who you might recognize as one half of Run the Jewels, will be composing the original score for the film. So, that's a pretty interesting thing, you know. You have a bunch of really good actors, you have a really good producer, all attached to a movie about one of the most famous gangsters of all time, and I bet Nothing Wrong is gonna go, oh god, it's directed by Josh Trank.
Oh, shit.
Always the monkey's paw, isn't it?
I swear to god, between this and Podcast O&A, we've run out, like, at least two full hands of monkeys. It's like their population is going to be fucking diminished to, like, extinction by this point, based on our fucking track records.
Yes. Coming to you from the man who brought you the acclaimed classic, Fantastic.
Yes, Fantastic, which also brought us commercials of The Thing eating breakfast at Denny's, even though I'm pretty sure canonically he's Jewish, so Denny's probably isn't kosher. But whatever, I'm going on weird tangents at that point, but
And also, okay, and also, LP joked about the name he's in the movie where he go by Zan Zimmer. Okay,
ha ha, well played, sir. Zans, I get it. the sense of humor on that, LP. He's a delightful fellow. Perhaps his music will liven up this production. And look on the bright side. Can this realistically be any worse than Fantastic? I'm not sure many things can.
9% on Rotten Tomatoes. It probably can't get much worse than that unless it really sucks.
So if it's like The Mummy or The Emoji Movie.
Yeah, so just hope that Fox and Sony don't have anything to do with it.
Pretty much, yeah. But now, let's move on to our next story here, which comes to us from the realm of progressive metal label Sumerian Records, which has cranked out quite a lot of good music over these past decade or so. But of course, their most famous, you know, poster child being those lovely lads in Periphery. And, you know, we really mean that. Like, they are very much... I'm not sure how often it is for, like, labels to have sort of mascot bands, let's say, like the one band that immediately represents everything you're supposed to know about that label. But Sumerian is definitely one of those labels, and Periphery is one of those bands. periphery Sumerian. Can't really have one without the other, and they're the first thing that come to mind. Which is why it was kind of shocking this past week when, on an interview on a Jamie Josta's podcast, or I think it's his radio show, Ash Avildsen, I'm bad with names like this. Ash Avildsen, the label chief of Sumerian, nailed it, kind of revealed that periphery may have left the label. You know, that's actually kind of an awkward thing. So, yeah. First off, I suppose it's probably good they had BT Bam signed, because they're going to need a heavy hitter to, you know, lead the charge. And, you know, judging from the actual quotes from the interview, it seems like maybe things weren't on the best terms, exactly. In fact, Alex, I don't know if you actually want to, like, read through any of this or summarize it for us if you have seen it already.
Sure. So, I'll try and give the Cliff Notes version here. Misha Mansoor sees Periphery as more of a passion project, whereas Mr. Adelson sees Periphery more as possibly a big moneymaker if the band would stay out of their own way. But, you know, those Periphery guys, they sort of do what they want to do, and they're kind of okay with it. But in short, reading over parts of the interview, there were some talks between Mr. Adelson and Misha Mansoor regarding a past tour where the Sumerian guy, as I'll just call him from here on because that's easier, wanted the band to play the song Jetpacks Was Yes, which was off their first album and was re-recorded for their Icarus EP. The band, or specifically Misha, wasn't possibly too into that. Quoting, "Oh man, this song is going..." I skipped the line. Quoting, "Guys, this is a mainstream tour. You need to play Jetpacks Was Yes. You gotta connect with these people," and they didn't want to do it. I finally convinced them to do it, and they're like, "Oh man, this song's going over great." And it was like, "Yeah, and you wrote it." It's like these bands are that get too precious for their own hits. Oh, that's kind of a low blow, isn't it?
Sounds like it. And it's kind of weird that they had to be pressured into that, because Jetpacks Was Yes is one of their best songs.
Yeah. Like I said, they got their own way of doing things, and so far it's been working out for them. So, you know, whatever, I guess. Quoting some more stuff from this interview with Jimmy Josta, from the Sumerian guy. "It doesn't matter because it's coming from me, and no matter what, I'm the label guy. To Misha, I'll always be, 'Oh, that's Ash, he's Hollywood, he's the label guy. He doesn't get it the way I get it. And Misha doesn't get it the way I get it. We can disagree and disagree. I'm comfortable saying that. I wish them the best, like they're going to self-release their next record," which is where this whole thing came from. "At least that's what they told me. I don't think this is me and the whiskey backstage with animosity. I'm telling you right now on this podcast, Misha, I love all you guys. Unless you write bona fide fucking hits and you're rolling the radio, I don't believe your new record would sell more than what you've done in Sumerian, because I have pride in what we do, and I know the value that we bring to any band, especially a band like that, with everything we do to promote and market and creative." Okay, number one, nobody buys albums anymore. That's just a fucking fact of life. Unless your name is Metallica or Drake or insert flavor of the week artist here, like Migos or XXXTentacion, you're not going to sell for crap. That's just simple. If you want to make good music, you tour, you promote all your stuff on streaming platforms, and you just sort of do that. Most bands seem to be happy doing that. That's just the way it is nowadays. Some more quotes from this interview piece. "Misha, I love you to death, brother. You're a superstar, but you get in your own way. You should be making... If I could play guitar like Misha and I had a singer like Spencer... Again, Periphery was an instrumental band helping grow Sumerian, and I'm so proud. None of this is meant as a diss to them. They are incredible, but this is me being candid record label guy talking about an artist I love who is very hard to A&R because they don't want to hear from anyone." Another quote, which is kind of interesting. The first record, Icarus Live, which is the biggest song in the record, they didn't want to put it on the album. They said it was an old song, which it is. It was written in like 2007, I think, along with Insomnia. But I said, no, it's old to you guys. It's not old to everyone else. It's going to discover your band when we help get you on tours, new music videos, and promote you and market you, publicity, and all this stuff. And it just sort of goes on and on like that for a while longer. So, yeah, this is kind of dicey to get through.
Yeah, it sounds like there might be some salt here.
Yeah, there might be.
The main thing I'm sort of, like, obviously you could probably discern, it's like, you know, Periphery very much want to do their own, you know, they want to be all artistically meaningful, while Ash is trying to be somewhat mindful of that, while also acknowledging that music is first and foremost a business, unfortunately. You know, not until, you know, capitalism meets its downfall or whatever. But, yeah, it's kind of weird, like, you know, the main thing is, like, they constantly have to be pressured, because we said, like, you know, songs like Jetpacks was Yes, Icarus Lives, and we could probably assume this applies to stuff, to other Periphery tracks, like, let's say, Scarlet, for example. Like, those are the most mainstream-leaning Periphery songs. Those are some of their best songs, but it obviously sounds like they're just kind of doing that, like, putting those on the albums by force. Which, it's kind of weird that they would consider that they had to be forced into it, given that they're really good at writing, you know, very technical, you know, genty diatribes, and then kind of the sugary, sweet, like, prog metal bangers. So it's like, why would they feel the need to be ashamed of one over the other? They can do both pretty damn well.
Yeah. Interestingly, Misha responded to this on a Facebook post with the comments that were made by the Sumerian guy. Quote, "It's pretty simple. We want Periphery to be a fun passion project and creative outlet. We don't really care about being a massive band or making crazy money with the music, and that has been our approach since day one. Ash is a businessman and wants his fans to be financially successful. Sometimes that means our interests are at odds, and contractually we had set things up to be in our favor, so we couldn't be forced to make decisions we didn't want to. With that said, and even in Ash's own words in the interview, when he came to us with good ideas, we definitely listened. Ultimately, we had a good run with them, and I'm grateful for our time on the label, but we have wanted to try starting our own label for a while now, and we finally have the means to do so." Yes. Making music and being in a band should not be about money first. It should be a creative outlet first. If you can make money off of that in today's day and age, one, good luck. Two, enjoy it. Money should not come first in music. Otherwise, I mean, look at the crap that record labels will put out nowadays. Freaking Columbia Records has this fucking weirdo SoundCloud rap album out there they're trying to pimp out right now, and it's just, you can tell it's a money grab.
So it's little Zans, little Pump, little
socks, something like that.
Little airplane, little quirky hat. I don't know.
Yeah, so, something like that.
So, I mean, credit to Misha. It seemed like he handled this more professionally than you would expect when stuff like this gets out in the public. But I guess we'll just have to see where this goes. And, I mean, it seems like they might be making some progress. I mean, as a quick aside to this, apparently they also released, like, a 10-minute video of their channel with containing, you know, snippets of songs from whatever the upcoming project is going to be called.
Yep, they're working on album number, well, technically album number 5, considering,
Yep, which of course is probably going to be called something like Periphery 4, Periphery 4 Genting with Babish.
sure.
So I guess we'll just have to, again, see where that goes from there. Now let's move on to the last of the proper news topics. So have any of y'all seen that Kanye West is back on Twitter?
Oh, goody.
Yeah, we're, you know, on this. So last week we mentioned apparently he was writing some kind of a philosophy book that he's apparently been tweet storming. And apparently, in the midst of all the tweet storm weirdness, including stuff about, like, sharing dragon energy with the president, and apparently his wife, like, making, like, some kind of mold of her body to sell as, like, perfume bottles or something. Apparently, there's also some music information in there. You know, remember, Kanye apparently does music as well. You know, if you can call the life of Pablo music. But yes, as far as the music information he's be dropping, there's quite a bit. Apparently, he's going to be dropping a solo album on June 1st. Apparently, 7 songs only, which, yeah, sure, I believe that.
Ain't that an EP?
Pretty much, yeah. And then after that, he's going to be, the week after on June 8th, he's going to be dropping a collaborative effort with Kid Cudi, apparently under the moniker of Kids See Ghosts. But that's not all. Apparently, the week after that, on June 15th, he's got a project lined up from none other than Nas.
So Nas' album's done? Finally?
I didn't even know he was working on something new.
Yeah, keep hearing those, damn songs on those damn DJ Khaled albums. I don't know if he's bullshitting about it. I don't know. Yeah. And also, I just figured out something. I just noticed, like, when Kanye announced the Nas album, it's like, wait, does that mean Nas signed with Good Music then?
I guess. Unless there's some other behind-the-scenes agreement they had going on. But wait! There's more! It turns out, before Nas, before Kids See Ghosts, and before Kanye, on May 25th, apparently there's gonna be a new release from none other than Pusha T. Looks like we might finally be getting King Push after all.
Good.
And we won't just have to keep spinning the prelude like it's fucking, you know, Ground Zeroes versus Peace Walker or something. Video game references, as your friends. And did I miss anything? I mean, he's been running his mouth on Twitter a lot, so I feel like I may have missed something.
No, music-wise, no, you got them all.
So, yeah, do we have to do this now? Oh, man.
All I know is I got deals with Pusha T and Nas, so there you go.
Yeah, I suppose, you know. Whatever, you know, 2 out of 4 ain't bad.
Yep, I'm expecting a strong 5 to a light 6. I'm calling it right now.
Yep, but that ends the proper news topics, but we still have one more bit of business to discuss here. Record Store Day 2018, of which it appears I was the only participant. So...
Because he works and I'm broke.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I'm broke too, but, you know, just temporarily.
Yeah, so I suppose where to start. How about the fact I willingly woke up at 5 in the morning and then drove all the way down to the record store, you know, the one where if you get there before 7, you have to call dibs on one item. And this time I was actually like, you know, there's only like 6 people between me and the opening of the record store, instead of last time where the line went around the corner to, like, you know, fucking who knows how far down. So yeah, just 5:30, just waiting there until 7, and then tried to call a thing. And like when they asked me, what's the release you would like to call dibs on? The first thing I said was, Steven Wilson, How Big the Space. And they didn't have any orders of it.
Yeah, I heard that from a lot of places. They didn't have a whole lot of that. What the actual crap, Carolina International?
Ah, wild times. And so when they asked me again what I wanted, I called the score for Twin Peaks The Return. You know, that's the one with like the picture disc with the red carpets from, yeah, that was actually a score and not like the soundtrack proper. So you know, I'm just waiting there. 8 o'clock, doors open, everybody's kinda crammed in there. I'm trying to grab all the record store day things I want. And so I'm just digging through, I'm picking, okay, I had about, like, $400, like, on me at that time, and so I'm just like, okay, here's one I really want, here's another one I really want, I was like, ooh, this one looks pretty cool, you know, mostly grabbing from, like, the 12 inches and whatnot, And there's one I'm trying to find. I'm not sure where it's at. And then I sort of see, like, one of the other tables set up, like, near the back of the store. And I'm like, I see, like, these big cardboard boxes with labeling. And I'm like, yes, that's the thing I'm looking for. And if you can't hear from this, that is some RTJ. Again, we'll get to that once I actually run down what all my releases were. So, you know, I pretty much bought about $360 of vinyl, I want to say. Like, even the cashier, when she was bringing me up, she was like, man, you cleaned house. Like you know, this is what happens when I save, like, whatever money I had for my tax refunds. And so I'm you know, just sitting outside for a bit, you know, throwing in my car. I'm like, maybe I'll dash back in, just kind of glance over everything. And then I see there's one that I forgot to pick up, which, spoiler, the one I forgot to get was, like, the rough draft to Dilla's Mixes thing. And I check my funds. I'm like, this is, like, $32, and I only had about, like, $25, $27. So, you know, run over to Walgreens, buy myself a candy bar so I can get some cash back. Then I buy that one last thing. Obviously, I'm just kind of still waiting around because there's supposed to be, and this is like me being a fat ass, but there's a food truck that was going to be coming in the area. This really great grilled cheese food truck that's like one of the best in the area. So I thought I'd just hang around for a bit, you know, to get more cash. You know, I decided to actually go to an ATM, which required me walking over to a Dunkin' Donuts and, you know, maybe getting some breakfast. I hadn't fucking eaten now that day. You know, go to the ATM, just kind of like, and I'm chilling around the store for a bit. Then finally the grilled cheese truck comes. I wait around for a bit, get myself my crab salad cheddar grilled cheese melt, which is just all ooey and gooey and delicious with cheese. So by that point, it's about 2 o'clock. I decide to actually drive back home. And then just for curiosity, I actually decide to go to like the little, there's a small sort of hole in the wall record store that's like near my house. You kind of have to make a couple like weird turns to actually get there just because I'm wondering. And then when I walk inside and I see, like, what their stock is, I'm just kind of thumbing through the vinyls. And then, just surprisingly, I find the Steven Wilson record. Multiple copies of it, in fact.
Oh.
Yes.
They lied. Or did they? I don't know.
I guess they must have been one of the lucky ones that ordered it. Because I guess the demographic for that store in specific must really like Steven Wilson. And, you know, just to show that I'm a nice guy, for my boy Alex, because I know he missed out, I got 2 copies that they had.
And I thank you for that.
Apparently it was only, like, $12 each, so, like, you know, 25. So, when factoring in all my spending purchases, in total, I spent $420.59.
Oh, so close.
So you spent $420 on $421.
Yeah. Shit. You just needed to spend 10 more cents and you will have the dankest sales total in human history.
Ain't that the truth? So I suppose now we should actually get into what my haul actually was. And yes, as previously mentioned, I got the big metallic, you know, RTJ Stay Gold tin thing, which, you know, comes with this really cool 12-inch vinyl that has, like, it has basically the entirety of RTJ3 on it. There's some good shit, and, you know, the actual cover for it has, like, a bunch of Marvel characters, you know, Iron Fist, Luke Cage, Howard the Duck, Deadpool, Punisher, and I think Elektra? Oh, and I should probably mention, You might have seen Run the Jewels tweet at a certain Miami record store, which is the one I went to, a place called Sweats. Apparently there was a secret giveaway that I was not aware of. What that was apparently the first person who called dibs before 7 a.m. dibs on the Stay Gold box set also got a RTJ hoodie and an autographed vinyl copy of RTJ 3. That was not me.
Womp, womp, womp.
I probably should have thought of that ahead of time. But yeah. Now, let me actually get my bag here. There's going to be a lot of stuff to sift through. So, let me start right here at the front. Yes, just for a mere $9, I got the SpongeBob SquarePants musical 7-inch. Yep. You know, it has that Panic at the Disco song, the David Bowie track, and David Bowie and Brian Eno, and of course the theme song. On this vinyl that looks like it's got, like, you know, the water splash effects. Next up, we have the Motorhead release, the one that has, like, their version of Heroes, as well as the Heroes Vakken Family Choir mix. So, you know, obviously that's all well and good. Next up, here we go. Yes, I actually found the Sourface release, Metal with Metal, you know, that has, like, I think it's a 10-inch disc or possibly a 7-inch, and it has, like, that, you know, weird comic booky, you know, stuff on it because, I mean, come on, it's Doom, guys, come on. Let's see, next up, the handle's getting in the way. Yep, Star Wars The Last Jedi, the 10-inch picture disc that features the themes of The Rebellion is Reborn and Canto Bight on a picture disc shaped like a porg. $30. Because clearly this is very important and worth the money. Now, let's see what we have here. Yep, both my copies of How Big the Space are here. Yeah, these are very, very nice looking. This artwork looks pretty goddamn spectacular. You know, it's like this weird, like, neon blue and red color splat painting all over fucking Stephen Wilson. Just put that down there. Then, of course, again, the one I called Twin Peaks Limited Event Series soundtrack. You know, all the musical appearances that were on the show, you know, like Chromatics, and of course all the Angelo Badalamenti stuff, you know, Johnny Jewel contributions as well. Then, after that was, of course, the actual soundtrack with all, like, the music artists that appeared. So, you know, you have, like, Sharon Von Etten, Nine Inch Nails, James Marshall, ZZ Top, Otis Redding, all those recordings and stuff. And, yes, even Shadow by Chromatics. Where's Dear Zombie already, you bastards? After that, there is, Swans, Die Tour East Zoo. I'm probably pronouncing that horribly, but, yeah, of course we gotta get some Swans action in here, man. It's fucking Swans! Let's see, next here. Yep, here we are, Rough Draft, Dilla's Mixes, you know, originally released 2003, from his Rough Draft EP, all his personal mixes and stuff, and yeah, I think it actually has, like, both versions of it, so, you know, you can see the original and then what they call the alternate, on the C and D side, so to speak. Yes, the two vinyl thing. Of course, Patton Oswalt, Annihilation. And man, just look at that artwork. You actually can't look at it because, like, this is just a recording, but yeah, it just looks like freaking really sad, like, depressing amusement park ride where the entrance looks like Patton Oswalt's big old face. And apparently it features blacklight artwork. Whatever that actually means. I don't know. I'm not a lighting expert. What's next here? Of course, Living Color from the vaults live at CBGB's on December 19th, 1989. Yes, this is a very, very sweet, man. You know, very cool looking, like you just, like, dug it out from just, like, a back row at a used store or something. Let's see what else we got here. Of course, from Brian Eno and Kevin Shields, The Weight of History and their Adult Swim single, Only Once Away My Son. And last, but definitely not least, you know, I felt like getting it for, let's say, sympathetic reasons, Mastodon, Emperor of Sand, the picture disc 12-inch, which is, yeah, this artwork looks fucking cool as shit, printed on, like, you know, a vinyl record. That's kind of awesome. I will give Mastodon credit for that. And so that is basically my Record Store Day 2017 haul. 2018, shit, we've been going on for a while. Now I just have to wait to get paid so I could send my boy Alex his shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably going to take a trip to the record stores this weekend because I have the weekend off. And hopefully I can sort of scavenge through the remains and maybe find something good, because I know the one place I go to has old record store day releases from like the past 4 years, but it's all the stuff nobody buys, like Lullaby renditions of Deep Purple. Like, who's going to buy that? Come on.
Probably the same type of person that's going to buy Lullaby versions of the Beastie Boys.
What?
These are real things, by the way.
We're not making this up. We couldn't if we tried. But yeah, that's basically my record store day shenanigans. That's it for the main topics of regular discussion. So now the last thing we have to cover here are the new album releases for the week of April 27th, 2018. Starting at the top, Godsmack have decided to waste record space with a new release, When Legends Rise. The newest album from British nu metaler Skindred with Big Tings. The latest release from experimental Detroit hardcore act The Armed with Only Love. A new release from Keith Urban called Graffiti U. A new record from Willie Nelson called Last Man Standing. A new Speedy Ortiz album, Twerp Verse. The return of the Sauce Man Post Malone with Beer Bongs and Bentleys. And last but certainly not least, the Queen Janelle Monáe comes back with her newest full-length album, Dirty Computer. Now is the part where we clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, Aura of Azure, literally everywhere, where you can see me just give general takes about general stupidity, which may or may not involve Kanye West.
Mark, what about you?
On Twitter, Mental Habit Media, and on my site, themindhabit1@thatwordpress.com. I think I'm not talking about our request go sometime this week. I mean, I need to have something to do. Also need to watch it again, so there you go.
As for me, you could find me on Twitter, Instagram, CuriousCat, @RobBarracuda. Email me, Robert@SurrealResolution.com. If you have questions, comments, concerns, and business opportunities, or just plain dank memes, who knows? Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. Audio only episodes go up every Wednesday usually. Video usually goes up by the weekend on the official YouTube channel of Surreal Resolution. Just subscribe, hit the bell tab so you're always notified when those go up immediately. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @SurrealRezo, like us on Facebook, visit us online at SurrealResolution.com, find the podcast on DecibelBoost.SurrealResolution.com. You know, listen to past episodes of us. Also listen to our anime podcast, Podcast ONA, where I show up to help discuss the massive lineup of the spring 2018 anime season.
Yes, it was a massive show in more than one ways. And it even had 12 minutes of outtake material.
There was a lot of phone calls, stuff.
Random noises, and something called the Domino's WTF Special.
Also heard Fillmore shows up. Which, yeah, that was true.
Yeah.
That is true. Be sure to keep up with our written content as well. You know, recently we all had a bunch of album reviews. Like, most recently, Alex finally reviewed the new Tesseract album, which is good stuff. Hopefully we'll have a review of the new surprise release from Mr. J. Cole. K.O.D., whatever that actually means.
Yeah, spoiler alert, don't let your pitchfork, y'all gonna beat me anyway if I don't love this album, and yeah, wait to see.
Maybe I'll see if I can get something out, you know, in the next few days. We shall see, you know, when I'm not busy with this. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat so you can dank it up with us and see us scream at each other for dumb reasons. And, of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. So, thank you for joining us this week. We'll see you again next week. And, until next time, 9091-89.